Good morning. Very happy to see you folks here. Nothing quite as exciting as the very last day at Mix, of course, after a tiny party. I made it here, and to kind of frame the conversation about performance, I want to start off and talk about the marketplace. There's actually a marketplace talk right after this as well. That's Todd Brooks who's giving that talk. Should be interesting. So I've got some stars up here on the screen, and it's all about the stars. So if you have a five-star app, you know, people sometimes just go, oh, yeah, I've got a buck, I'm going to buy that app. If you've got a one-star app, people are going to start reading those reviews. What happens if they say it, it says, hey, horrible performance, scrolling's just awful. You know, those people are not going to buy your app. You're going to drop off the marketplace list. At that point, you know, what's the point? Your app's kind of no longer relevant. So it's all about the five stars, and performance is one thing. You know, combined with design and obviously your app working functionally, that's pretty important when you're looking at app performance. So my name is Jeff Wilcox. I'm a senior software developer engineer, something like that. this guy's laughing. On the Silverlight Windows Phone team. And actually, you might also know me. I currently have the number one top rated free app on the marketplace. And the app's called Fourth and Mayor. I'm not plugging it. It's free. But the reason is interesting. The reason it's interesting is actually that, you know, while I was building this app, yeah, the app works. It's great. It's functional. But I also looked a little bit at performance. If you read through the reviews for my app, you'll see things like, hey, wonderful. It's so fast. It's responsive. Smooth scrolling. You read a little bit farther and you'll see things that say things, you know, hey, horrible performance. Performance sucks. You know, what did you do, Jeff? You're the performance guy. And so it's actually a little bit of a trick I played on everybody. Apologies. I did not performance optimize my app very much at all. The point was to make, you know, if you sacrifice your perf, in some situations you can actually give an experience that's good as well. And that's kind of about the perception of app performance. We'll get to that. Kind of want to start off by showing everyone an example here of a Windows Phone app. All right, pretty typical here. Startup time, we're waiting. Okay, we're still waiting. Yeah. All right, cool. Our page is up. So I'm running the Nodo update on this phone. It should be pretty quick, but obviously that was like, I don't know, anyone counting 6 seconds probably? The marketplace might not even allow that. Now what's interesting is if you look at this, you know, it looks okay. Right here, not bad. If I start flicking around on this, the screen blanks. And, you know, when people touch your app, the first thing they do is see how the scrolling perf is. This is obviously pretty bad. Not sure what's going on. So this is kind of worst case. Windows Phone app, we're showing a little bit of information. Our data templates, yeah, we've got a title. We have a rating control, some details. But really, there's not much here. It shouldn't be this complex. You know, what did Silverlight do? Jeff, what did you do at, you know, at your day job? Obviously, you messed something up. I've heard that before, and I'm going to show you that it's not necessarily my fault. Anyway, let's take this app. We're going to iterate eventually and hopefully fix it. So, of course, first things first, you really need a Windows Phone. Last year, we were here at Mix, and we said, hey, you know, there's an emulator. It's beautiful. Eventually, there will be Windows Phones. Well, now they're out, so you need to beg, borrow, or steal one because the emulator has nothing to do with the way that your app's going to perform on the device. Stefan mentioned that in his talk. You know, it's just one really basic thing. We found developers that just, you know, hey, they build their app, they deploy to the marketplace, they get one-star reviews, and then they're kind of depressed from that. So to avoid depression, get a Windows Phone, borrow one, whatever else you need to do. The other thing that I kind of recommend to people is kind of taking a coffee break. You know, go to coffee with your Windows Phone detached from the emulator, because network performance is really different than what you might experience on your computer. When you look at performance, again, the first thing people see is scrolling. They touch that list. If it's not performant, that's a problem. And the thing that really impacts, if you look at a profile for Windows Phone performance the most, it's based on the UI model. If you have a ton of visual elements, let's say you have, you know, 6 really basic controls, at runtime, those can expand up to 36 or 40 different elements, because you're looking at grids, borders, all these visual things combined. And the trouble with that is, you know, at runtime, if you have a big list, we're having to create these elements over and over again as you scroll down the page. So the UI model is really the biggest bang for your buck if you want to performance optimize an app, is just try to understand better what's going on. There was a talk yesterday by Vibor, and it was about the profiler. Sorry to deceive you if you read the abstract for this talk. It said, hey, Jeff's going to talk about the profiler. I'm not. Sorry. The reason is you can go watch his talk, and I have enough content here that it's just not worth jumping into. Also, since we haven't released tools yet, you know, I want to show you guys some methods for just kind of iteratively improving where things can be fixed. Not going to talk about networking too much, but one of the new things we did, this is a breaking change in Mango, actually, is we fixed the issues with Web Client. Previously, we told people, hey, do not use Web Client for web requests because it's slow. It always comes back on the user interface thread. That's fixed. It'll come back to whichever thread you initially called it on using synchronization context. So just beware of that. I'm not going to talk about networking at all going forward. If you look at the graphics stack, you know, there's the frame rate's the most important thing. You want to be at 60 frames a second on the compositor thread. And if you're not, you know, if you're in the 50s, that's great. Users can't really perceive that. If you're in the 30s, you'll see choppiness in the UI. That's a bad sign. Obviously, if you drop below that, we've got problems. Now, what runs all of this is, of course, the threading model. On Silverlight Desktop, it's pretty simple. This is what we're looking at. You've got the user interface thread, the UI thread, and that's the guy that runs everything. So we're handling OS input, messages from the OS, the browser. All the animations happen there. We're rasterizing images. Just everything happens on the UI thread. The trouble with that is, obviously, the UI thread gets really busy. If we're currently processing animations and you want something to be smooth, you're also parsing JSON, things just kind of come to a halt. So when we looked at the Windows Phone, we realized that one of the most important things would obviously be independent animations, as we call them. It's the idea that we have yet another thread called the compositor thread, and that guy handles graphics primitives. So if you have a simple image on the page and you want to have it fade in, you can add a bitmap cache, or in many situations, it just kind of works. And what that'll do is it'll say, hey, this is something that you can create almost a bitmap screenshot of, hand it off to the compositor thread, and then through the GPU, we'll fade that in and process your animation. The nice thing about that is it keeps the UI thread open. The UI thread can do whatever it wants. Ideally, again, you're actually just kind of keeping it open and simplified. Now, the background thread is there for hopefully networking, parsing JSON and XML. If you're not using it, you're doing something wrong, come talk to me. We'll fix that. Windows Phone Mango, which we announced, has yet another thread. We love our threads. This guy is called the touch thread. It sounds pretty exciting, I know. But the reason that it's there is that we want to really try to fix the smooth scrolling performance problems. So what we did, you saw this probably in the Scott Goo keynote, is we took that, the whole touch interface system, the way that we get events from the OS, and we decoupled it from all these other threads. And so that means the instant you touch your screen, in our list box, we can actually optimize that and say to the animation system, hey, stop that immediately, you know, make it look smooth. If you reverse the direction, if you flick it, that's all immediately responding. That's something that in Windows Phone today you don't have. Hopefully, everyone will just enjoy this in the next release. Now, some of the other things up here that happen on the UI thread, I swear we're not going to eventually have 20 threads going here on all these different things, although my boss might think that, who knows. But there's a lot happening still. We're handling all your data binding. So data binding complexity is an important part of this. We're doing all the layout for the system. Layout's, again, the most expensive thing in terms of performance. It's a place to look to optimize. We're also just handling the rasterization of graphics. So every single time you have a graphics element in your page, it's actually going to, at one point, be rasterized on the UI thread, and then it's handed off if it can be. Some people think that if they use the compositor thread, everything happens elsewhere. That's not the case. So, you know, complex visuals do have an effect no matter where they are. Forward. Now, the layout pass, again, most expensive thing. It's kind of, it's the beauty of Silverlight. We built it so that you have this nice, rich visual experience. You can make your phone app look like an iPhone app. Don't do it, but it's possible because you can kind of skin anything. It's a really rich system. There's items controls. They expand at runtime. Content controls the templates. And it sounds great. You can take a Silverlight desktop app, grab some of that code, add it to your Windows Phone app, and then you can get one-star reviews because you find out it wasn't really built for that experience. So in the layout pass, every time that we're going to go ahead and animate a frame, we're going to look at the layout system in its current state. And we're going to ask the system, hey, is the tree in a valid state right now? Hopefully it is. If it is, we just return immediately. It's really quick. It's a no-op. We go along on the UI thread doing whatever else we need to do. And you'll have 60 frames a second. Trouble is, most of the time, the tree will be invalidated. Of course, if the size of something changes, you add elements to the page, you load in content. So in this case, we go through this whole kind of recursive measure and arrange pass. It's super expensive, but it's what powers everything in the graphics system. Okay, so you have that there. There's a problem if you are using a callback, a per-frame callback. In that situation, if you change the visual tree in that callback, we'll actually go through possibly do an entire secondary layout pass. And so in a typical Silverlight, Windows Phone app, a list-based app, the last thing you want to do is use per-frame callbacks. That's typically something that game developers do. At the very end of this whole process, that's when we hand things off to the rasterization engine. So there's a couple people in this really awesome photo. This is deep from within Redmond, no windows. Well, we're running Windows, but there's no windows in the conference room. Some of the people in this room are also in this picture. We're a good-looking bunch, and the thing we're looking at is profiler data. So we actually have a very advanced profiler. It lets us get into the native code that runs the Silverlight core. And we've been meeting weekly, mostly because, people in this room, people on Twitter said, hey, you guys kind of messed up. Performance on scrolling doesn't seem quite as good as it could be. And, we listened to that feedback, and Scott Guthrie kind of said, hey, we're going to lock you guys in this conference room until you fix the problem. Good news is we did. Again, the first thing, moving touch off thread. That was the big improvement. We have a guy on our team, Alan. He did this work. Again, we locked him in his office. He did that stuff. And it's really exciting. I have it on this phone up here. Eventually, I'll show it to you. It's just really impressive. We, of course, found in this whole profiler exercise other mistakes we may have made or opportunities to optimize, depending on who you're telling. The virtualizing stack panel is what's built into ListBox. And VSP, we found places we could optimize. We were just making, little assumptions or things that we could fix. We've done that. It'll be quicker. And our goal there is, as Microsoft, our platform should support really nice, smooth scrolling. And we can do some of that work, but we need your help as well. You need to make sure that you're doing the right, making the right decisions in simplifying your visual tree or, just considering the data binding that you're doing. We've taken image decoding off thread. It's kind of a nice performance improvement a lot of people were asking for. So if you have a huge Twitter list in Mango, it just kind of pops right in. The other thing we did is we optimized memory. We make mistakes like everyone else, and apparently we're, having duplicate copies of bytes sitting around and duplicate memory streams in a couple spots. And, we realized that they weren't needed. We could eliminate them. And so people actually find with Mango that they're getting a 25 to maybe 40% don't quote me in a marketing sense, improvement in the working set. And that's important because if you get to 90 megabytes of usage on a 256 megabyte device, the guys in the marketplace won't let your app onto the marketplace, and so you're nowhere. Anyway, that's some of the stuff we did on the Perf SWAT team. The other thing I want to talk about performance here is about perception. People, that's not me. There's a heartbeat happening up there somewhere. So people perceive your application performance completely different than the raw numbers. So if you take something in the profiler today and you kind of decompose it, it might say that your startup time's 4 seconds. It takes, half a second to render certain visuals. Well, the funny thing is you can make little tweaks in your app to either show a nice loading experience or maybe bring part of your content in. Your users may not actually know any better. It's not deceiving. It's their perception of performance. And so that's kind of the last opportunity you have. There's only so much you can do for raw perf. So I'm going to show a component that helps fix that in pivot controls and explain that a little more in a bit. So that's it for slides. Slides are no fun. At this point, I want to go ahead and jump into the good old Visual Studio. So this is the app that I'm toying around with. And I have a control that I copied from the Silverlight toolkit for the desktop. It's the rating control. The guy that built it's really smart. It's a really powerful control. And it's horrible on the phone. Don't use it. It's one of those situations where on the Silverlight desktop, you have this really nice quad-core or hexa-core computer. You probably have 24 gigabytes of RAM. Silverlight's just partying on that. You'll never have an issue. Trouble is, on the ARM device, on the phones, of course, we're looking at 1 gigahertz. We're looking at limited memory. And things just don't run as fast. So if you look at the toolkit rating control, it's a lot of stuff in there. It's like composed of a whole bunch of little, you know, primitive controls, other pieces that as a designer or even a typical developer, you might not kind of look into the bowels of the rating control. Trouble is, there's a ton of stuff happening there. We'll replace it in a bit. First things first, though, is the good old performance counters. Show of hands if people know what the performance counters are. You've seen this before. All right. You don't have a quorum. Sorry. So I'm going to go over these. Starting from the very top. Oh, geez, that's impossible to see. There's something that looks like a number, the very first thing up there, and that is the compositor threads frame rate. So that's the system that's doing independent animations. It's the thing that makes animations look smooth and beautiful. It should be as close to 60 as possible, like I said before. 50s is fine. Anything lower, you'll see choppiness. The second number is the big shebang. That's the UI thread count. And, well, it's actually really high right now. That's because this is a powerful computer. It's the emulator. If I was looking on the device, it would be nowhere near that number. But the UI thread, if it's above, you know, 20, it's not going to be a problem. But if it goes low, things start to be affected by it. If your UI thread is just completely doing a ton of work, you'll find that that starves the other threads. And so you'll affect animation performance, background thread performance, plenty of things from that. So although there's different threads, of course, it's one core at the end of the day. So that's the most important number to look at, the second one. The third one is the graphics memory usage. It's not memory use in your app. Really, game developers worry about this. I've never looked at it except for about right now. So the number after that is the number of surfaces that we've handed off to the GPU. Again, most app developers don't need to worry, but if you see really high numbers or numbers just changing all the time, just beware, you know, think about what's happening in your visual tree. Number after, this is the intermediate surface count. So if you imagine layering a couple different elements together, you can raise that up and it'll affect GPU performance because we can't do everything if you have a really complex nesting of elements. So if this is higher than, you know, one or two, just look at your tree and try to remove whatever you can. The bottom is the fill rate. Here it's 2.42 or something. And the fill rate is the guy that is pretty important, actually. If it's above 2, like in this case, performance will be degraded, especially if you're above like 2.5. The fill rate, if it's at 1, means that we're painting an entire screen of pixels every single frame. It seems to make sense. If you have an image, it should be at about 1. However, if you're in this situation, we have some text in front of the background. That means that we're probably looking at adding maybe an additional 0.3 or 0.4 to the fill rate. In this case, though, we're even higher. And part of that's because, in this case, I'm using the panorama control. It's a beautiful part of the Windows Phone world. It's this hub experience. It looks nice, but it immediately adds 1 because of that image to your app. And so it's a situation where, you know, if you're getting too high, you need to figure out where you might be able to make little optimizations. There's one performance counter missing, though, that's super important. Maybe we should add it to our platform someday, but that's memory use. Again, 90 megabytes is the magic number. And so you should really monitor memory use during app development, but it's kind of hard to find that. Thankfully, one of the guys on the phone team, Peter Tor, created a memory helper. I'll put this up on my blog, or you can just Bing for Peter Tor, memory, and you'll find that. If I just drag this diagnostics helper into my project, I can then open up the page where I have the frame counters and kind of add this in. So in your app XAML CS, you'll see the part where we have profiling information. I've actually commented this out because in my case, I want to be able to look at this data even if the debugger's not attached. Obviously, you, at some point before you ship, want to remove that. Just going to add memory diagnostics helper. Tell it to start up. And now if I run the app, we should have one more kind of counter overlaid at the bottom. And it's pretty hard to see here, but we have 51 megabytes of use right now of memory. That's pretty high. You know, most apps, if you have a simple page, you're looking at maybe 25 megabytes. That's not a problem. But gee, 50 megs is pretty big. If you imagine bringing in a little bit more content, you could really easily be up to 90 megabytes, especially when you transition between pages maybe. The nice thing about this helper is it'll actually have a debugger assertion the instant you hit 90 megabytes. And so, you know, your app experience just kind of halts. At that point, you can try to figure out, hey, where was my memory being used? Thankfully, the profiler provides some of this information. It's kind of hard sometimes to dig around and find exactly where you have memory problems, but you know, a little bit of sleuthing and you'll get there. Now, there's a couple other performance counters here that we've talked about in the past. From a graphics standpoint, I can show you real quick what enable redraw regions looks like. This is a counter that effectively says every single time that we're painting something and redrawing it, we'll change the color. So in this case, we're not redrawing this information. But you can see as I click on this, we're redrawing some of the surface. So this might be a situation where if you see something flashing in color, you typically know that that's a problem area. You should find a way to try to optimize that by getting it onto the compositor thread. Go ahead and comment that out. So in my main page for the app, I already said that we're using Panorama. That's the nice hub experience. To be honest, though, this is not the right app for this. It's just, well, it looks horrible. First of all, in my case, I need a better picture. But I'm trying to show a list of books. It's like a reader application. And, you know, in this case, I have this huge text that says read. You know, it's just wasting space. And then I do have my content, but, you know, it just doesn't seem like the right experience. And I may have selected wrong. I should be using the pivot experience instead of Panorama. It's something where when you're looking at Panorama, it's supposed to be about the whole rich magazine experience. So if you imagine, you know, the front page of a magazine, you really need to keep it simple, super simple. You want list items, you know, here's titles, click them, go to another page. If you're trying to add buttons and text boxes and a ton of interactivity to it, you'll find that things are slow. The reason is Panorama actually loads every single Panorama item at startup, and that's to provide a little bit of the good visual experience. You'll see on the right of Panorama pages, you actually get the little preview of content right next to it. Well, to do the preview, obviously we need to have the content loaded. And so that's just part of the design decision in Panorama can affect perf. And so startup time for pivots often quite quicker than Panorama. Consider those experiences and please keep it simple. You know, white space is king. If you don't have a lot of white space on your Panorama, you're doing it wrong. So I'm going to switch this real quick to pivot, which is actually surprisingly easy. Called Search and Replace, and it's built into a lot of apps. So Panorama, replace with Pivot. And I don't need the background. Little design note, not that I'm one of the designer types, is that you can have background pictures on pivots. That's completely fine. You'll see that the music app in Zoom does that too. And so if you're looking for a nice visual experience, but don't want to take the performance cost of the Panorama, you can use a pivot with a background, and you just don't have that parallax effect, but it still looks nice. So I'll go ahead and run this now. Quick little eye test. Yeah, I can't read that. 36 megabytes. So instead of 50 megabytes, we're at 36 just by using pivot. And that's because of the kind of the heuristics we use in pivot internally. So the instant you go to a page, we pop up the pivot. We'll load the content there, and so it's a pretty good startup time. Trouble is, We need to load more because we want to provide a smooth experience when you pivot around. So we're actually also loading right after that first page comes up. We'll kick off a load for both the items on the left and the right, so the adjacent items. So that means if you have three items, you'll find that pivot and panorama are pretty similar in perf from a startup standpoint. However, once you have more, those items aren't loaded until they're needed. So if I drag this, you can see I just went up to 38 megs. Dragged over here, I'm at 40 now. This is the Bing Maps control. Bing Maps is a great experience, but it has some costs associated to it. We'll talk about that in a bit. I have some random animation happening, an exciting one. So at this point, all my items are loaded. So at this point, we paid the cost, we paid the price for all the items, and it's a smooth experience. But we should probably go back. I don't know what this is doing, but this animation's not very helpful. Reason I call this out is this is on a pivot item that's not on the first page. The user's not looking at it, but we're wasting time on the Silverlight side, you know, taking that animation, processing the animation, every single tick. This animation is on the compositor thread, but it does affect perf anyway. So you need to either hook up to the pivot selection changing events and kind of say, hey, if the user's on pivot item 3, let's go ahead and show them, you know, turn on the animations for pivot item 3. That's one strategy if you want to have animations. Another is just, you know, consider if you need it. This page says more. I don't know. There's not a lot more here. I'm just going to delete this pivot item completely. So the more pivot, get rid of that guy. All right. So we moved to pivot. We had the pivot loading experience. The one other thing I want to demonstrate is the difference between the defaults for ListBox and some of the changes you can make to it. We use virtualizing stack panel by default, and that's the experience where we'll virtualize the UI. So if you have a data template with these rating controls, we'll load the first page, and then I think it's about two additional pages below. That way, you know, you can smooth scroll a little bit, but we won't load items farther down. So if you think of the People Hub, you know, there's 300 contacts in there. If you don't use virtualization, we're going to immediately render all 300 elements. That has a perf cost. But there are situations where you might want to remove the virtualization. To do that, we just replace the items panel with the regular stack panel. And I won't run it, but what this will do is you'll have a degraded startup time, perf experience, because, again, we're showing every single item. However, once it's there, we have graphic surfaces for everything. So you'll find it's really, really smooth to the touch. So in some situations, you might actually find that if you just have a couple pages of data and you want to have a very, very complex data template, that you can use a non-virtualizing stack panel today. In the next release in Mango, hopefully perf will be so good that you don't need to do that kind of a hack. And since I'm talking about Mango, kind of jumping all over the place, I want to show real quick one of the nice improvements we've done if you do need to worry about memory in your app. So this is Peter's little memory app. And there's an experience in here where we're jumping into a property bag called Device Extended Properties. And Device Extended Properties is where you can get a unique ID for the phone, you can get memory use, a lot of random properties. It's like the, it's just full of a ton of stuff. The trouble with this is that Device Extended Properties is a static type. At ingestion point in the marketplace, we'll say, hey, this actually requires unique identifying information about the user. And so that means that users might actually be dissuaded from using your app because they're afraid of their private data or the unique ID being used. So in Mango, we fixed this with a new type called device status. You'll see here there's a ton of properties, including the current memory use, information about the device, and you can use these without having that same exact capability. And that's a win for developers because it means you can do custom tuning to your app for memory without worrying about that. So that's just one of those one-off things we did some work on. If we look at the rating control, in this app, we already know this is the biggest problem with the experience. You'll see that there's all sorts of stuff happening with rating. Zoom in. Yep, so this is my pretty typical data template for ListBox. We have a grid. There's a couple columns and rows. Now, one thing I'm doing that maybe isn't perfect is I'm using auto-sizing on the rows here, and that could potentially impact perf because if things change size, we'll have to do additional layout work. I'm not going to worry about fixing or changing that. I have the image on the left, text blocks, and then the rating control. So there's a couple properties here. I have it bound to my rating, which is just a double. And then it's actually an items control, the way it's implemented. So you actually put rating items inside the rating control. Well, let's think a little bit. We have rating, which is a control, and it's probably composed of additional template parts, additional sub-controls. We already saw a big list when I expanded that earlier. It's also composed, though, of a whole bunch of rating items. And the way that rating works is it'll show the star and then do some clipping with the graphics system. The trouble with this is, you know, that's a ton of stuff. If you imagine, you know, we clearly have about 10 items right here, but those 10 elements are going to expand at runtime. I did the math earlier, something like 90 elements per rating control. And so just be aware when you're using controls, especially user controls, what's going on under the covers, because this, again, is a really big impact. If you want to think about this in a different way, you know, right now we just have a couple items. Imagine if we had 10 items in there in the list box. You know, that's effectively what we're doing, but no, it's 90. You know, just tons and tons of stuff happening. So in this case, I don't really need the nice experience that rating has. You know, I can do work ahead of time to get a perf win anyway. So this is kind of a specialized situation with this control. But I want to get rid of rating, and I'm going to replace it with images. And this is actually what a lot of the top apps have done to optimize rating, because you can pre-render this kind of stuff and not worry about, you know, at runtime doing this kind of graphics manipulation. So my first attempt here, I'm going to replace rating with a content control and a special binding. And I'm using like a template selector. It's going to basically pick one of these predefined templates up here, which ReSharper is not showing, but it's effectively going to pick one of these things. You'll see that we're down to the grid and a couple images. It's a lot more simple. So I actually want to try deploying this and just see where we are in perf. Switch to the device. Maybe. I have basically the ultimate Franken build on this phone. All right, so startup time was again slow, but if I scroll through this, there's a little bit of blanking, but overall, it looks pretty good. When you go up, you'll see blanking more often because we load the items below in virtualizing stack panel, but not above. However, you know, it's looking decent. I wouldn't be too concerned using this app, but we can probably do better. Because in this case, we still have this selection process happening. So in this content control, you know, I have a binding to the content. I'm using a converter here for the template. And it's a pretty basic converter. It's just saying, effectively, what's the rating number, doing some quick math and returning a certain item. Thing is, that means when you scroll down the list, we have to go from native code to managed code a bunch of times. You know, we have to evaluate the converter and just kind of, you know, figure out what to do. Can probably optimize that out because, you know, it's just extra work. So the next step on this is to move to just a raw image, a single element instead of this grouping of elements. So right here, my data model is actually exposing a rating URI. I've hard-coded in here the height and the width. That's going to make it quicker. Now if I deploy this, You can see the images pop in. Now we have a pretty good experience. Again, this probably took us from about 6 elements plus all the binding and converting down to just the 1. So just think about when you're working on controls where you can make optimizations. Inherently, binding and converting isn't a bad thing. You know, it's just something where if you're using it too much, it might be an issue. The biggest one that people use converters for is visibility. If you can add that to your view model somehow, you'll actually get pretty big wins because that's just one less conversion. You know, take one conversion, multiply it by 100 items. It's a ton of stuff. I should have left that open. So another thing that's going on here, there's book images. And if I actually open up where the images are, I'm using pretty big images. You know, maybe I'm getting a web service that's passing these down. Stefan, in his talk, demonstrated a component that resizes them. I'm not going to show that right now. Not enough time. But what I can do is I can ask my graphic designers, hey, go into Photoshop. Let's get images that are appropriately sized for the list. So I'll just blow away the other ones here. Now I can come into my item, and what was previously a stretch on the image, I'm just going to get rid of that. And this will hopefully speed up perf a little bit. Just a small win, because we're not having to do all the resizing of the image, but it's enough that these kinds of things add up. The biggest thing we found with people is if you have a big list of like your Twitter friends, you might have avatars that are 72 pixels by 72, but you resize it to 60. That's actually, you know, that just adds up again. It's additional resizing we're doing. So consider trying to size your images as best you can, especially inside lists. My little cheat sheet says that next I want to show what's called loading pivot item. This has never been seen, so we need some excitement. Loading pivot item is one of the tricks I used in my app. It's actually used all over the Windows Phone OS, and this is where you see the loading experience. You go to a pivot, it'll say, you know, loading music, loading artists, and this is kind of one of those trade-offs with perf. So some users, you know, are like, oh, geez, you know, loading, just show me the item. The thing is, you know, often you have to download data, there's work you need to do. So I authored a component that is just a drop-in replacement for pivot item, and it'll wait until you go to an item to load it. This actually has a lot of benefits. I'm going to have this on my blog, but I have defined a namespace somewhere in here. I think it's called C. Yep. So there's a namespace. It's just in my helper assembly. And I'm going to replace every pivot item on the page. You don't have to replace them all, but it's easier that way. Might as well. So replace with loading pivot item. Oh, no. It's now officially a Microsoft demo. We've crashed. So hang on to your seats here. The good news is there's a guy in the audience that opens more bugs than anyone else in the company, so he's probably just opened a bug in that time, I hope. He's smiling, so he did, I'm sure. Anyway. I should have worked on some jokes, but I'm really not that funny. All right, pivot item. I'm just going to replace one for right now. So namespace is C. It's called loading pivot item. Then I need to fix this down here. All right, so this is saying this pivot item should have a loading experience. There's also some properties like loading text. I can say loading books to kind of personalize it. You could even data bind in there. So now when I run this, it's in the emulator, so it's going to be really quick, but hopefully you see really briefly a loading screen at the top. Loading books. All right. In the emulator, it doesn't look like a lot. But if you think about what's happening, I'm actually not even applying the visual tree at that time. So I can go through, hopefully, quickly. I'm not going to use search and replace because I'll be embarrassed. Just going to replace a couple more of these. It seems like search and replace is something kind of simple we could have gotten right in the tool, but I'm going to blame the power commands I'm using here. All right, run this guy. Something to pay attention to is going to be memory usage, because if you think about it, only this first page right now is loaded into memory. We're at 21 megs. So now I'm going to swipe over. All right, loaded the content in. So as soon as you go to the item, behind the scenes, I pull in, basically I set the visual tree there. It'll start loading the elements. And then once it's ready, we'll go ahead and pull that in. There's also a special interface you can derive. So if you're downloading data from the web and your data context implements that, I can actually wait to show your content until your data is actually loaded. So it's not just a perf win, it's also a usability win. Instead of users seeing, you know, a list that's kind of half empty or just loading in, they'll just immediately get the full list once your data is there. Now my memory use is going up. And at this point, all the items are loaded into memory. If you do have memory problems in your app, I have a special property on the loading pivot item that will actually pull the page away as soon as you pivot away. By default, I don't have that because I think that once you've seen the loading screen once, that's probably enough. Let's keep it around. But this is a component that could help if you have memory issues as well. So that's a loading pivot item. Now I want to show you something new in Mango. I am apparently the progress bar king. If you're not using my progress bar, you could have an issue in your app. Thankfully, progress bar is now in the Silverlight toolkit for Windows Phone, so just use that, hopefully. At this point, I'm so tired of talking about progress bars, but I'm going to do it this one last time. In my app, I have a single frame. And so a frame is the root visual in your app. And there's actually situations where you can, you know, change it. You can put extra stuff in there. And I highly recommend that you put a progress bar control inside the frame today, because you don't need, you know, progress bars on every single page of your app. Just have a global one and hook it up to your data system. So I've actually already done that here with the performance progress bar. But in Mango, you no longer need my progress bar, thankfully. So I'm going to delete this stuff that inserts it into the visual tree. Then uncomment this progress indicator. Progress indicator is just a new part of the Windows Phone world. I also add the property here. And then it has really simple properties. Is it visual? Is it indeterminate? It actually has a little property you can have text too, but I'm not going to worry about that. So I go ahead and run my app. And since I have no data, because that never works in demos, I have a cool checkbox. We're going to load. Super small, but you can kind of see up here at the very top, it's loading. And this is done by the OS, and so it's really, really quick. It doesn't affect your Silverlight UI thread very much. So it's a nice win. It's a nice thing to use. Move to progress indicator once you're in the Mango world. So from a startup standpoint, our startup perf is still really bad. One of the reasons is there's actually a map control in my app. And since the demo is always something that you don't have enough time for, I'm just going to show you that I'm going to remove the map from my app. You know, it's not something that I think makes sense in a pivot. For me, I don't need an interactive map. I've already turned off interactivity in my pivot item. So I'm just deleting this in the demo. But on my blog, I have a component called static map. And if you just want to show basic data and maybe a couple points, but don't need interactivity, this will hit the Bing Maps REST API for static maps. And it's really, really quick. It just pops right up. And it's a huge perf win when you don't need to have the interactive Bing Maps experience. Now, that's like a runtime win. But Bing Maps itself is a really complex control. It does a ton of cool stuff. But if you have to load that at startup, it really can impact perf. So that's why I'm pulling it out here. Go ahead and also delete the assembly reference. All right, so that's a little bit of a win because we're not going to load that assembly. If you look at what the Windows Phone does, we have to verify, of course, is it an official app? We do some hash checking at startup. So the first time is a hash check. We're going to go through every byte of the file to do that. Once we think things are cool, we hand it off to the CLR. And the CLR is going to say, oh, these are bytes. I'll read them too. And so we're reading every single assembly twice. So some of the basic wins are, if you ever have images in your app, you don't want them to be reference types. Of course, you want them to be content types. Content, unfortunately, is not the default. Another tools bug there. But content will mean that it's not part of your assembly, it's part of your app. And so you can use the image still, but it's not something that's read twice at startup. So if your app's full of images, just double check that you're using them the right way, because that'll be a little bit of a win. Same goes for embedding, you know, XAML or all sorts of other things in your app that you don't need to. So something I have is I have an about experience in my app right now. Uh-oh. I pulled that out. Supervail. Oh, sweet. There's my Bing Maps key. Use it. Have fun. All right, so in the app at the very bottom, I have this button that takes you to the about page. It's just a pretty basic about page. I have a ton of little random text in here. You know, this is something that like 5% of users use. In my app, it's about 5% that people have ever seen the about page. I like to think that people see it, but, you know, it's not something people do. So if you have experiences like about pages or where you create new accounts, those things you should consider moving to a second assembly. If it's an assembly that's not loaded at startup, it's a really big win. So I can actually go ahead and delete that page. In this example app, it's not a huge win, I guess, but it demonstrates it enough. In the real world, you'd create a new project, drag in your page, and be able to reference it. It's a demo, so I already have it. It's just a second project. All that's in there is my about page. That's it. But you can imagine having, you know, a wizard experience for creating users or, you know, whatever you need to have. Maybe even libraries, you just use it one time. And then I'm going to just add a reference to the project. And then in my app, I need to change how I refer to it because it's no longer a local XAML page. So this is a pretty typical navigation call here, saying, hey, go to my about page. When you're looking at assemblies, though, slightly different syntax. It's basically saying the assembly name is about page. It's a component, and here's where we want to navigate to. That's all I have to do. And if you watch, so right now, these are the assemblies that have loaded so far. We have toolkit, controls, the rating control, the basics here. If I click on the about page, you can see that back here, it went ahead and it loaded aboutpage.dll. So we actually didn't need to worry about that until the user actually wanted to use that capability. Page is the same, the experience is the same. Startup's quicker, though. One other thing about startup time, I've actually, personally, I hate splash screens, maybe because I think there's a lot of apps that use the default. If you use the default, I will find you and yell at you. Please just use something different if you're going to use it. But I actually say, if you have a pretty quick app to start up, especially with Nodo going out, just delete the splash screen. Personal preference, you guys can do whatever you want. But if you delete the startup screen, the splash screen, it might feel quicker to the user in some situations. They didn't see the pop where they saw your brand. Instead, okay, they saw your app load after half a second. In my application, I decided not to use a splash screen. I think it feels more like the OS apps that way because it doesn't kind of have that jar. Something to consider. Performance-wise, there's not really a win there, but it is just a different visual experience, a little bit about perceiving how people perceive your app. So time-wise, we're getting pretty close. I had a ton of cool stuff I wanted to talk about, but just wanted to get the basics out, I suppose. There's some components that are issues today. There's tilt and transitions, and the tilt effects built into the Silverlight toolkit, it's what gives you that touch experience, and it's a really nice visual effect. It lets people know that they can interact with the content. Trouble is, it does have a slight perf impact in a list sometimes. You might see it kind of jitter. We're looking to find a way to fix that, but it's just a little graphics rendering issue, and it does have a slight impact on perf because we hook up to the manipulation event, and then we'll do the math there. So make that decision in your app. If you want the tilt effect, that's cool. It's probably going to cost you maybe a couple frames a second, but really only when people are touching it. So it's pretty minor. But it's a situation where the design experience kind of, you know, negatively impacts perf. The other one are the toolkit transitions. This one actually affects perception, but not really performance. The transitions will wait until the second page loads before pulling it in. So you'll see apps. Mine's actually one of them. I get horrible reviews for this. You touch some pages that are really, really advanced. It kind of sits there. And it's because it's loading a new page. It's not ready. Transitions aren't ready. As soon as it comes up, maybe half a second later, it'll animate in. So that's a situation where my page is too complex. I really should optimize it, pull out some of the content, make it go quicker. Isolated storage should definitely be off-thread. That's kind of a no-brainer, hopefully, but there's a couple components that help with this. Isolated storage is quick in general, but if you do it at startup, that's just one more thing that's kind of delaying. In Vibor's talk yesterday, he showed in the profiler where you can find that out as well. It'll kind of tell you about that. Another note on isolated storage, a little secret here, probably should make it a little bit more known, is that today in the Windows Phone, if you have like 1,000 isolated storage files and you ask for the list of all the files, it's pretty slow. So you should consider other ways to structure your isolated storage. Maybe it's making almost like a hash table experience, organizing things into subfolders, and it's really, really quick then. So that's just a little one-off that if you have a ton of data in your app, it can be an issue. And I already mentioned static map, so. That's mostly it for the demo. Really the message that I want to send is that it's more about simplifying than it is some little magic bullet. You know, I didn't share any trade secret here that says this will immediately fix your app. It's really something that is up to the app developer, and it's also up to us at Microsoft. We're making fixes, obviously, in Mango that improve things. But it's not something that, you know, will just magically work. If any of you have a Fruit phone by a Fruit company, you might find that perf is pretty bad on that sometimes, too. I think it's pretty clear that not everyone, it's a hard problem. No one solved it perfectly. I've seen iPhone apps that you just kind of flick and, you know, they jitter. It's slow. It's just part of the experience that, you know, complex visuals are going to have some cost. So we're really happy to help try to fix it on our side, but we need your help doing that too. Perception, again, I think is one point that is really worth thinking about. If you need a really complex visual, you know, that's fine, but, you know, just know what the trade-off is. Try to find ways to make it look nice. And I think if you do load a really, really complex page, you want to find a way to make the UI at least somewhat responsive. There's some tricks that are pretty, like, you know, crazy PhD level that are pretty cool that you can slowly load in parts of lists. And so what that'll do is if you're waiting maybe, you know, 5 milliseconds between items, you can load a big list in, but it'll still be responsive to touch to the user in the current release of Windows Phone. So all sorts of little, you know, hacks are out there. It's not always about hacking. That's why we're improving the platform too. But there are little, you know, tricks and tips and tricks that will help it. Hopefully some of this stuff helps you guys. So anyway, look forward to Mango. It should be good. We're locked in Redmond every Friday afternoon with Profiler, trying to make things better still. We're still hard at work. So hopefully things will be great. Q&A, and real quick, I just want to show, these are other sessions that are happening today on Windows Phone. So thanks for coming out. It's a morning session and the last day, but I appreciate it. And if you do have questions, if you could use the mics.
So I really appreciate all your insights on this. I have kind of a general question that last year there were talks about having two different screen resolutions, and it sounded like that's kind of been thrown out. And I saw you using like fixed widths to avoid, you know, like auto resizing.
Yep.
So I'm wondering your thoughts in general on hard coding all positions and using canvases and not using auto anywhere when it comes to perf, if you think that's reasonable to do now.
Yep. So the question is really, you know, I'm hard coding some widths on here. How's that going to affect other screen resolutions? As far as the screen resolutions, you know, we announced that last year. You know, things are where they are right now. It could happen. In my app, I actually don't have any hard-coded layout elements. I'm using grids. I'm using auto-sizing. The things I hard-coded were images and the rating control. That's stuff that I control. It won't change. That's one way that I'm mitigating it, but it is actually a perf win in a lot of situations to hard-code widths. The messaging we've told people is if we do change the offer other screen resolutions, we'll give developers time. So I wouldn't worry about it today. It's not like tomorrow there's going to be, you know, these other resolution devices. As far as I know, they don't tell me anything. But, you know, take it as it is.
So you mentioned about moving the about page off to a different assembly. Does it make sense to just have the main page on the main assembly and then move all other pages to a different assembly or set of assemblies?
So the question is, you know, I offloaded the about page. Could I do that for everything else in my app and just have the main page in the first assembly? That's actually what some apps do that have a nice startup experience. Some apps transition from like a splash screen into what's actually an animated XAML page that looks the same. And that's where you get like a little loading progress indicator. Then they load the rest of their app. In that situation, for effectively delaying the main page, it doesn't help because you still have to load that. It's just a slow startup time. But if your main page is the main assembly and you're doing everything else separate, it can work. Trouble is, as a coder, it's going to be a challenge. I do this a little bit in my app, and I had to add interfaces to communicate between different components. It's always a tricky problem, but the trouble is, like, if you have a singleton in your app or some way of communicating data, it doesn't always hold up. Thankfully, the navigation system is pretty basic. It's based on URIs, so in many apps, it's not a problem, but it could be a great win. Yeah.
Hey, in the white paper for performance, the on layout updated as opposed to on navigated to in the page was the recommended way to do sort of heavy lifting.
Yep.
Does that still apply, and will that still apply in Mango?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, at startup, anything you're doing in startup in like a constructor or the loading event, it's just going to impact perf. There's a lot of people with dispatch or invoke inside unnavigated too. I think that remains the same. Keep coding apps the same way. Hopefully it's not too difficult. I think it makes a lot of sense there though, because if you think of the navigation model, we might actually have pages around that aren't being used currently. If you do it in unnavigated and detach events in unnavigated from, it'll kind of keep things better. You won't leak memory. It's just a good practice, I think. Any other exciting questions? All right, cool. Thanks.